Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life. All right, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman, and I'm sitting here with two normal hosts. Who am I sitting with?
I'm Darren.
And I'm Tom Regan.
I feel like the past couple times we've done this, we've had like a standoff of who's going to talk first.
And sometimes you point to us, right. And this time you like there was no cue.
I'm looking at you, but
and then we just stare at each other and like, who's going to do it?
Yeah,
yeah. Hello, darkness, my old.
Okay, we want to be humble. We want to be humble. Yeah. Basically,
that's what we want to do.
I don't want to go first.
Well, yeah. Thanks for joining us this week. We have been in a series that we've called "The Word of Their Testimony," and this is something that comes out of Revelation 12. The whole idea is that the accuser is overcome by the blood of the Lamb, the word of their testimony, the testimony of those who were following Jesus, and then them not loving their lives unto death, as McGregor loves to point out. And so the whole idea here is that we just want to celebrate people's stories. We want to hear the word of people's testimonies, because that there is power in those. There's power in hearing the way that grace has intersected with people's lives, the way that Jesus has changed lives. So that's what we've been doing. We're going to do it until people stop volunteering, just because it's been a cool thing. There's been a lot of holy moments here, but we have a very special guest with us today. Very special guest. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Wow, this sounds like an after-school special. So I'm Harry Frankenfeld, and me and my wife, Andrea, and our kids, Lucy and Ezra, have been at Imprint for a little over a year now.
Awesome.
I guess. Yeah, something like that. We've sort of been in the mix for a while, but we finally started coming about a year ago. Yeah.
We're glad to have you, man.
Yeah, totally.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about you. What do you do? I know Andrea is a teacher, and again, I know you have two awesome kids. What are you up to these days? What do you do?
Well, first off, I should give a disclaimer. I feel really nervous because I'm on the wrong end of the mic.
So, yeah, because you used to be on the other side of the sound engineering
all the time
decades. Yeah. So I'm not a speaker at all. So anyway,
you sound really good though. By the way,
you do.
Have this great voice.
Thanks.
I feel it already. I feel like
maybe I need another career.
It's a new
there you
career.
Go. Yeah.
Do some voiceover.
This is
work.
Your breakout.
Yeah. So career wise, I'm a marketing project manager for a small healthcare company here in Kirkland. I've been there for 5 years now. Outside of that, I mean, do you want hobbies?
Tell us about Harry.
What is a Harry Frankenfeld?
What is Harry into?
I spend most of my time with the family. Like, mm-hmm. you know, because it...
Yeah, how old are the kids?
So Lucy's 5.
Yep.
Ezra's 2. Mm.
That's your hobby.
So fun.
Yeah.
And exhausting.
Yeah.
And fun. And exhausting. Anyway.
Yeah, that's season of life. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so they spent a lot of time either playing with them or swapping with Andrea so that she can get some time or I get some time. You know. So anyway, do some woodworking at times.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Right now I'm building a Lego and train table for the kids. They'll have like
perfect.
Drawers and stuff. It's about 2/3 the size of this table. So.
Which is, for the listener, what? How many feet?
6 feet
they,
table?
They can't say that.
It's about not quite 4 feet long and not quite 3 feet wide.
It's a platform for the Legos to go on?
Nice. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's basically because we're tired of having like bins of Legos everywhere and trains and stuff. We need to consolidate.
Yes.
You know how handy I am? I bought a giant piece of plywood and I put some casters on the bottom of it.
All right.
And then there's a platform and then Carly builds her Legos on it and then we just roll it under her bed. So that's the most I've built in the last 40 some years of my life.
I still play with Legos. That's how handy I am. I just bought for Christmas, my daughter got it for me for my birthday last year, a bonsai tree Lego.
All right. Well, so I remember you got a bonsai tree a few years ago.
It is amazing.
I think it ended up as a sermon illustration.
I tried so hard to grow that. So if you buy that Amazon thing, that bonsai tree, it sounds awesome and it starts strong. And then about 2 months in, it just wilts. And no matter what you do, I've heard from several people who have tried this thing.
Okay.
Because I used it as a sermon illustration. And so that all these people bought it. I was like, wow, I've got influence, you know?
Yeah.
And then everyone told me the same thing.
For
everyone.
Evil.
This is four different people. But yeah. Yeah. Influence for evil.
It's like a chia pet. It just grows for
it's
a little bit.
That's a short amount of time. Yeah. I thought I was winning at first, and then I reached out to all those people, and they're all like, yeah, these things don't grow in the Northwest, so.
It's too dark.
The Lego one does, though. I'm here to tell you. Yeah, it still is in my office.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, Harry, man, the reason we're here again is to kind of celebrate stories of God's grace. We're all, in a way, trophies of God's grace. He's done things in our lives, so. Let's start kind of towards the beginning. What's your faith background like?
Where are you from and all that stuff?
Yeah. So I grew up just outside of Dallas, Texas, and grew up in a Christian home. We were a very Baptist house.
Yeah.
Very.
I can tell because you said Baptist, and I also say Baptist.
Totally. So,
I always ask Rex how to say that. I never feel like I say it right.
It's not Baptist.
Yeah. I don't say
There's
it right.
no P.
I can't even fix
it's
that.
It's B-A-B.
Yeah. Yeah. It totally is, yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like you had to have been raised in that to say it right. Like, Baptist. I can't be trained. It's like trying to learn your language or something.
Well, and if you grew up in Texas, then it's Baptist.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Really squeeze on the A.
Yeah.
So, my dad was a deacon. My mom actually worked for the state convention.
Which is part of the denomination, is that
exactly?
What you mean?
It's sort of the structure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you say deacon, that's like the Baptist version of the elder in that church, or was it actually a deacon role? Because sometimes they're flipped.
Right. It was totally flipped.
Yeah.
It was totally flipped. We were at church every time the door was open, it was a deep part of our lives.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't schedule something that was non-church when there was something church to go to.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It was a very typical sort of Southern Baptist experience where, they couldn't decide, are we Arminian? Are we Reformed? Mm-hmm. What do we really believe about grace? Mm-hmm. And so I would say I really grew up without an understanding of grace.
Mm-hmm.
It was
okay.
Very legalistic.
Mm-hmm.
We had these envelopes that you were, gave your tithe in, and they were mailed to you. And they had these series of checkboxes on them. And it was like, how much are you giving? Bible read daily, prayer daily, shared with so many people, invited so many people to church. You know, it was just this very,
have a nice day.
Yeah, yeah. I had a pastor in college that put it this way. It was just sort of the hamster wheel for Jesus. Constantly. But that was my understanding of Christian faith, I look back and God was definitely at work in that. And there's, I learned a ton about the Bible and I learned a ton of Bible verses and actually remember a lot of them still, so there was definitely some effectiveness there, but I really didn't understand grace. But at the same time, God started working on me. And I remember when I was five, just starting to ask questions with my dad and we met with our pastor. Mm-hmm. And that was really, I look back, that was really where God captured me.
Wow.
And then we waited a couple of years. I was baptized a couple of years later. I understood as much as a 5-year-old could about, what sin is, and, sin is lying and being mean and that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And that was the start of a journey. I had a youth pastor that was sort of the next, I would say, evolution of my spiritual walk was having a youth pastor that was in seminary, and he was bringing in his class material into our groups. And so, like, I was in a small group doing Knowing God with him.
And, oh yeah.
And the funny thing is I was thinking about that a couple of nights ago, and just at the time I thought it was just really cool that I was reading this, really dense book.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And it's so ironic because the whole thrust of the book is about really knowing, having a relationship with God, and yet I was all about the knowledge of it.
And
I was a smart kid. I mean, I did well in school, and so that was really a source of pride for me. And it also, it was that double-edged sword. It was a source of pride for me. It was also how I found my value. And how I felt value to God, like, okay, I'm going to keep learning. And it was, my faith was very academic, and just consuming as much as I could, tons of books. You guys remember?
Yeah, we helped Harry move into his apartment when he moved up here. Like, how many years ago? Like 10 years ago or something like that?
Yeah, it was, that was...
We're like, well, clearly 13, this guy likes to read.
He does, yeah.
Yeah. Between Andrea and I, Andrea is an English teacher, and, when we got married, we merged libraries.
Oh, yeah,
and,
That's pretty serious. Yeah.
I think we had 40 of those, cube boxes of books.
Yeah, the U-Haul little boxes or whatever. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
So did you feel like kind of that was a self-justification before the Lord? You're like saying, look, Lord, look how much I've done for you. I've learned all these things or something. Is that kind of...
Totally, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, if I felt like I wasn't doing enough, then I would do more.
Yeah.
And just that grind of just continuing to do and do and do.
Yeah.
And that continued into college, really. And it really continued until I was broken. So my sophomore year, of college, I dislocated my shoulder for the 8th or 9th time, something like that. And
you're like Mel Gibson from Lethal Weapon. Sorry.
Just slam it back. Into place.
Yeah,
I just showed how old I am.
Yeah. Well, and seeing that, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't work like that.
That's literally the first thing I thought of when he said that too. I just didn't say it. You said it for me.
Listeners, tell me if that was the first thing you thought of. Yeah, if you're dislocating it.
Yeah, so it's I had to have shoulder surgery at 20, and during the recovery time. I mean, I'm right-handed, and I, couldn't really take notes in class. I couldn't really write papers. I couldn't, had to take incompletes on everything that semester, and then tried to make it all up the next semester along with another, a full load. And then I had two grandparents alive at the time, and my grandfather on my father's side passed away, and then a month after that, my grandmother, who I was very close to, was diagnosed with cancer, and so this all happens within about 6 months, and so I'm struggling academically, and I've always been a great student, and then just all of these emotions that I just really didn't know how to deal with. Again, I grew up a Southern Baptist in Texas.
Yeah.
We don't do emotions.
No, you pray those away. Yeah.
Exactly. What are you talking about? You don't feel emotions unless you feel happy.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's all you feel. Huh. And so I went into a really deep depression. I didn't know it at the time because I didn't know, what's depression? That's what crazy people do, right? And just really struggled. And thankfully, God had put me in a church that it was a church plant. So I have...
It's in your DNA?
Yeah, I think... And that's actually the church where Andrea and I met. So it's like, we love church plants. And so you know, that was where, you know, meeting with a, you know, a couple of the pastors there just every week working through, okay, what is grace? And, you know, that was, you know, we started going through Desiring God, you know,
yeah, yeah.
And that was my first sort of foray into
more Reformed, you know, theology.
The graces, the graces. And it really was life-changing. Huh. And I'm so thankful for that period because I started sort of unpacking, I don't have to just keep on this grind. I don't have to, you know, tap dance for Jesus. And, you know, this is, there's so much more life here. Mm. And I think that was when, you know, at the same time I started working through some of just sort of the emotional baggage. And, you know, that's been a long journey as well, but it, you know, allowing myself to feel emotionally connected to my faith.
Yeah.
And I would say that was the first time that I was aware that I felt loved by God.
Wow.
Oh man. Yeah.
And you know, that was at 20, about that time, that was about 21, 22.
Which is interesting that it came out of a time of pretty much helplessness on your own behalf. Like you move for this, like you've been able to most of your life do all the things to prove yourself to God that you're worthy of his love.
Yeah.
And then suddenly when you find yourself in a complete loss, you are finding his love to be enough for you. That's that's pretty amazing. I mean, that's counterintuitive from what most people think, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that I would say one of the big themes of, you know, looking, you know, I'm 40, just turned 48. Looking back, I feel like I can very confidently say God kept me through those years.
Mm, yeah.
And that's, you know, obviously that's not because I'm special, you know, some special gift to the church or to God, but that God in his kindness kept me when I didn't really want to be kept. When I was ready to just chuck it all.
Yeah.
You know, when I moved to Nashville to go to college, I was bound and determined not to go to a Baptist school.
Yeah.
Or not to a Baptist church.
Yeah.
I started searching, and ironically enough, you know, I ended up at a Baptist church.
And Jesus still met you at this church.
Still there.
Which is good.
Still there. Sure. Amazing.
Can I ask you a random question? This is kind of off script in some ways. Not that we have any script right here, but what would you say to a person like yourself that was raised in the church that maybe is having a hard time experiencing the love of God? Like, you know, the intellectual thing I think is something that we desire a little bit, as especially if we're raised in the church, because we feel like we want to go to that kind of next level with God sometimes, or like,
yeah, you want to graduate.
You want to graduate, right. You want to keep moving. Like how, you know, I mean, yours was weird because it was kind of outside sources where you're hurt, you have an emotional hurt from your grandparents' loss. But
right. How
would you say, what would you say to a person to connect their heart and their mind if they're raised in a church like you were?
You know, one thing that this is probably going to sound simplistic, but I don't really care. one of the things that was really helpful for me is to slow down and read the stories of the Bible. And it was funny because, you know, I grew up with all of these stories, you know, and, you know, I had collections of you know, Bible storybooks, you know, on the shelf when I was a kid. And But going back and forcing myself to really slowly read them and read them as stories,
that's
and
great.
Reading how there are these men and women and children that God chooses to engage with, it and in relating myself to those people, like real people, helped me relate and go, oh, okay, this is possible in my life.
Huh. It's not, Would you say that it took it kind of out of the realm of the cerebral and intellectual?
Absolutely.
And just like enfleshed the reality of God, like enfleshed it, put it in real life context, relationship?
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, I was, so like in college, I was a double major. One of my majors was religion. And so you could say I read the Bible professionally at that point. Yeah. But taking it off of, I have to analyze this to death and just going, this is a story that I can engage with and enjoy.
Yeah, for sure.
Just made a totally different paradigm.
Yeah. Well, it gets the characters of the Bible out of the stone-faced flannel graph mode.
Exactly.
And into people who experienced deep emotions with God.
Right. And you know, that was part of it, was looking for, okay, what are the emotions happening here? You know, what are these people feeling? What is God feeling? And I mean, obviously that you can take that to the extreme and you can get too deep into that and it becomes like Jesus calling, or no offense to anyone that likes that, but, it was a helpful approach in that season. I feel like it's one of the many ways that we have to look at scripture.
Well, emotions are a gift of God.
Right.
And like any gift, they can be abused, right? We can
right.
let them get too influential in our lives. We can also do the opposite, right? We can ignore them or push them down like I do.
Right.
I stuff them deep or whatever. Yeah. You know, but I try to feel the feels, but Rex sometimes does that for me.
I feel Darren's feelings for him. I call him my emotional support.
He helps
coach.
Me unpack those things. But I appreciate that that's part of your experience with the Lord, was like, putting it into a real human moment, a real human emotion, and not allowing it just to be a brain thing, and not just, you know, the Christian life is not just an information transfer.
Right.
It's a transformation of heart and mind and soul. And, you know, we're pretty complex people, and they'll let the Word of God do that for you. It's pretty sweet. Yeah.
Let me ask, what was it like? I know, again, I also grew up Southern Baptist. what was it like for you when you sort of I'll use a metaphor of like stepping through a door where you understand what God's grace is? How did that change your life? How did that change your experience of the Bible and then just life in general? What was it like?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was angry at first because I was like,
was it like I did all this stuff and it's not worth anything, or was it?
There was definitely some of that. It was like, man, I just lost all this credit. What? You know, it's like losing a gift card or something.
Yeah,
I don't
know.
But then I was also angry at, you know, my pastors growing up and my Sunday school teacher, and like, why are you teaching all of this when there was such a richer table to be had?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was sad, and it was for the same reason, you know, I look back, I'm still, you know, Facebook friends with, some of the guys that I grew up with, and, most of them have just left.
Oh man, that's sad.
You know, and I'm sad for them, but I get it, you know, because
the crushing weight of morality or something like that.
Yeah.
The church never gave them a compelling vision to be a part of it,
because
they
weren't
giving them anything life-giving.
Right, exactly. It was soul-sucking, you know. And so, but I feel like that also gives me compassion for them. And so when I do engage with them, you know, and just...
How does that affect your parenting?
Man.
Now we're diving into
Tom from the top row.
Boom.
With the elbow smash.
The people's elbow.
I am.
Because it has to shape how you want to raise your kids to know Christ. I mean, I think about that too, a ton. Yeah.
My default mode is being critical and being and being a legalist. Mm-hmm. And
let's just be honest, like any parent, it seems like, yeah.
Man.
So you gotta, so you're working hard to fight that off.
Constantly, and my mm-hmm. and my wife very kindly calls me on it regularly, and I'm so thankful for that, because I need it, because you know, I can be working really hard at being patient and being gentle, and you know, especially with my daughter, and not wanting to crush her spirit the way that I feel like, you know,
it's easy to do.
Yeah, and but and then just get frustrated, just and be demanding, and just, you know, she's five. She has the vocabulary of an 8-year-old, but she's five. I need to remember that, you know.
And it's hard because those experiences, children really shape the way we adults, I mean, in so many ways. And and so it's hard to relearn that. And just to be clear, we're not trying to pick on all Southern Baptist churches.
Oh, no.
Great, not at all.
Southern Baptist.
So just to speak to Harry's thing as well, I, you know, there was some legalism in what I grew up in, but I look back at that, and it sounds like you do as well. I really grew up learning about the Bible. Like, I feel like I have a biblical worldview. I'm very biblically literate because I grew up there was such good stuff that came from that. There was bad stuff that I've had to deal with, but it wasn't all the worst, you know. We're not picking on Southern Baptists. Can you say Bab?
Well, God can redeem those things, right?
God can
your stories, he's redeemed those things. I think he's opened your eyes to
isn't it Ezekiel where, you know, he says, I will restore the years the locusts have eaten. That's always brought a lot of hope to me. It's like, well, okay, even I might look at this and write the whole thing off, or you might look at you know, your years prior to that and write it all off. The Lord will redeem those things. In so many ways. So
And I feel like, I mean, you know, our, you know, like I said, Andrea and I met in a church plant at Southern Baptist.
Right,
and we continued down that road. We've been very Southern Baptist. You know, we went on the mission field for a couple of years with IMB, which is the Southern Baptist group.
Yeah, it's great. Yep.
Where did you guys
go? So we were in India for 2 years, and we were on the media team. So we were producing stories, you know, video, audio. Andrea was a writer, social media coordinator. And then, you know, that came back here to the States and helped sort of churches engage in foreign missions. And those were beautiful years, and those were really hard years. Some of the hardest years of our marriage, I would say. Mm-hmm. Incredibly stressful. I would say that is where we realized that we were not totally aligned with the SBC and just their vision of what discipleship was and evangelism and it just wasn't a good fit.
Which is totally fair. Like, sometimes God brings people on different paths and organizations on different paths, and that's that's okay.
And you know, again, I'm thankful it's another, you know, that's another season of God keeping me, God keeping us. You know, we came back very depressed because we, you know, we're being pushed to, you know, to work in one way is very, you know, very much sort of like encounter evangelism, like just, you know, very, and that was sort of, that was the discipleship model. And, you know, then you tell someone, oh, and now you're a church. And so go get your friends. And just, it did not resonate with how we see discipleship as this long process of meeting someone who doesn't love Jesus and walking with them in life. And then, if by God's grace they meet Jesus and you get to walk with them some more, and you know, so we just we came back to the States thinking that we had failed, and we also had struggled. You know, our big part of the story of our marriage is just struggling with infertility, and that became very apparent in the field, and So you add that level of stress on top of living in someone else's culture and trying to blend and feeling like you're failing at everything that you're doing, literally. But being a guy, I came back and said, okay, we got to pay the bills and we got to, you know, I got to figure out how to make money and got to figure out what's next. And thankfully, like, God provided some income for us, first through some freelancing for me. And then, that's when I started working at a church, again for, I was a media director, you know, just at a medium-sized church there in Nashville, and it gave Andrea space to crash and to really start processing, and that was a great gift for our marriage, I would say, because she is much more emotionally intelligent than I am, by a long shot, much more relationally intelligent, and so her being able to get into a healthier place sort of paved the way for us to get into a healthier place.
Yeah.
How about you? Did you, I mean, being an intellectual, being a cerebral guy, dealing with a significant emotional loss, at least up to that time, with, infertility, how did you handle that with your relationship with God and what you, were your prayers like? What were you, was it kind of the shaking the fist at the sky, or was
very
it just
much so?
It was okay. So you felt some emotion during that time. Okay,
I felt this pressure to keep it together.
Yeah,
you know, I gotta protect my wife.
Yeah,
I gotta give her space. So that means I need to, you know, and it's just going back to that, some of that unhealthiness that I grew up with. I've got to sacrifice myself and sort of, you know, and but at the same time, very angry with God, and just, God, why did you do this? Why, you know, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. We're
serving you.
We're extra serving you. But it was, yes, a very deep emotional prayers, and then seasons of just going, well, forget it, God. I'm not talking to you.
Man. Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be silent to me, I'm going to be silent to you.
Yeah. Your life sounds a little bit like Psalms.
I might be a missionary right now, but I'm not going to pray.
Yeah.
And then I felt guilty about that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a roller coaster.
Yeah. But the real human life is a little bit like a roller coaster. Even a life of faith. We feel like when we say we live by faith, it feels like we're never, you know, hurting, we're never angry, we're never frustrated, we're never,
so not true.
You find that, you find out where God meets you a lot of times is in those vulnerable places or in those moments of
at the end of yourself in some ways.
That's a theme in Harry's story, is it not? Find yourself at the end of yourself and you're like, okay, the Lord is still there. Actually not even still there, like beckoning me there, like, hey, come over here. I know you've been trying to do that over there, but come over here, like, this is where I want you to be, because this is the end of everything, you know? So,
You mentioned the Psalms just a second ago, and the Psalms were what I felt like I could read.
Yeah.
That season.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm trying to pull up, I use Lectio 365.
Ooh.
Love the app. And it's just morning and evening prayers. And this morning's, excerpt from the Psalms, just felt very appropriate, because it was, the Lord himself watches over you. The Lord stands beside you as your protective shade. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord keeps you from all harm and watches over your life. The Lord keeps watch over you as you come and go, both now and forever. And
wow.
Hearing that Psalm, you know, threw me back to that season as well. And just realizing that we're tempted, and I would say I was raised to believe that keeping you from harm means things go smoothly. And, I feel like God was just very gracious in disabusing me of that belief in that season. And that he kept me from harm because he kept me, you know, that he kept me as his
child.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like, so like everyone, in the Seattle church world, I've been listening to, you know, the Mars Hole podcast and stuff. And I really appreciated in the last episode, Paul Tripp's comment about deconstruction, because deconstruction is so popular a term. And you know, he said that, we should be deconstructing our faith constantly, but not in a, well, I've decided to, you know, throw or chuck everything to the wind. I'm going to call it deconstructionism, but really just examining, what do I believe? Where is this in Scripture? If it's not in Scripture, why do I believe it? Yeah. And I feel like that has been also a big part of the last 20 years.
That's great. Yeah. You know, I kind of feel like the Psalms are, if not a barrier, it's a help in seasons like that, because you can read the Psalms and be like, oh, wow, I'm allowed to pray like this.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, you know, it's God is not scared off by me saying, where are you?
Well, even Job's response to his friends, sometimes you're kind of like, wow, that's an intense response, you know, in various places where I don't know how I'd respond in situations like that, but he feels a lot of stuff. You can experience that. So Psalms, Job, some of those places are just, they're real, they're raw. And I appreciate that.
They're not flannel graphs. So.
No.
All right, so it's about 2013. You guys are back from the mission field at this point, and you're in Nashville. But we aren't in Nashville right now.
We aren't?
No, I don't think so.
That would explain
Get on
Demun, a lot.
Demunbrian and just follow it all the way here.
Rex is from Nashville, by the way.
Of course, Nashville isn't in Nashville anymore.
I know, so. It's true. It's L.A., but with a twang is what it is now. Yeah. But so all that being said... how did you guys make it up here to north of Lake Washington? And that's it's just a really long way from Nashville. So what happened?
So so we got back from India in 2012 and landed in Nashville. We weren't really sure what was next. We were considering... going through the process to actually go back, you know, like I said earlier, we emotionally, we were not in good shape.
But so you were thinking about going back, even though
crazy enough. And that's sort of, I mean, that's a complex issue in and of itself. Cause it, you know, like I said, we came away feeling like we failed. And I think there was part of both of us that wanted to go back and prove that we could.
Sure. Yeah, you could
that
do
we
it.
We had it. I mean, God kept us in Nashville, and I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah.
So I started working at a church, you know, on the east side there. Of Nashville, not
different east side.
Yeah. And not a great fit, but it was income and it
was steady.
You know, it was a place to be. And in the process, I felt like God was calling us away from Nashville. And that was pretty clear. We came back and, you know, we had been part of a house church in India. And so, you know, we're there where, you know, our community, you know, our church community is, you know, maybe 10 couples. And so you don't have men's groups and women's groups and, you know, it's you have church.
Yeah.
You have all the programming.
Group. Yeah. And so we come back to Nashville and we're just feeling overwhelmed by this sense of wealth, and not just financial wealth, although that was very overwhelming, but it was this sense of spiritual wealth that, you know, Nashville's in the middle of the Bible Belt.
Yeah, totally. So, it's the buckle.
Yeah, it's like if it's not Houston or Dallas.
Yeah, exactly. Right? But I mean, yeah, it's like Lifeway is there and other Christian organizations are there. And
exactly.
All that.
Yeah, and there's churches on every corner. And so why in the world do we need to be in Nashville?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, we still had that sense of missional calling and wanted to figure out where we could continue to live that out.
Yeah, totally.
And so we just started looking, what are the options out there? And I connected with a church headhunting group.
Oh.
That was actually a really great resource, but if you didn't know it, that it's a thing. And was looking for a place to do production. And I had just sort of fallen in under the influence of a guy named David Taylor, who's out at Fuller and has done some wonderful work on the use of the arts in church.
Yeah, that's Fuller Theological Seminary is what he's talking about.
Yes.
He's the guy that did the YouTube video with
Eugene Peterson.
I just watched that again. Yeah. That was fantastic.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. So he his first book was a collection of essays called For the Beauty of the Church. Huh. And like Lucy Shaw from up in Bellingham is in it. Andy Crouch.
Love Andy Crouch, man.
Just some great stuff in there. And so my heart was really sort of, I wanted to be in a place where I could help churches have an environment of worship and do good art.
Hmm.
And somehow I thought that would happen like in the production world. And I think it can.
Oh, definitely. But
it just doesn't often.
Yeah.
And that's not 2013 Harry speaking, that's 2022.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and so
But you were doing some production stuff in India, like you were telling stories and
So
there was some sort of trajectory in your life that was leaning towards that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's still, I love helping people tell their story. And that's what I really loved about India, was just being able to help capture that and help people tell the best version of their story.
Yeah.
And that's why we're asking you to take over as director of Abound in Hope.
Dun, dun, dun.
But, I got an offer from a church over here in Kirkland. And Andrea and I flew out here, and I will never forget, it was socked in, less than quarter mile of visibility, fog the entire weekend. So we didn't, like, we're driving around, we couldn't even see trees.
Yeah.
Like, and we still came up
here. This is a mysterious land we'd like to move to.
It was bizarre. And we knew on the front end that the church was more seeker oriented, more like less our flavor of missional living, but we felt like it still could be a good enough fit. Mm-hmm. And so we said, okay, well, we're gonna do it. We're gonna, you know, pack up. We ended up spending 3 weeks driving out here.
Wow,
man.
In our little Impreza, we sent some, you know, a pod of stuff, you know, what we had left.
A bunch of books.
Basically a bunch of books. Very little
The
furniture.
Ones we talked about moving.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And then we moved out here. And it was sort of crazy. You know, we don't have family out here. We didn't know anybody out here. We just moved. It was, you know, again, it was a challenging season. You know, I think... So I ended up staying on staff for just shy of 4 years. And I stayed because I thought maybe I could have influence.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I loved was connecting with and caring for my volunteer team. And I had a pretty, you know, decent sized volunteer team. But then I also wanted to be able to keep pushing in, you know, how are we telling the gospel in our services, and what are we doing in terms of production that helps reinforce, not just sparkle and wow.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
And I felt like that voice was fading. Like I just did not have the influence that I thought I could have.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that finally, you know, at the end of 2017, you know, Lucy, our oldest, had been born in September, and I was just like, this isn't where we need to be. This does not gel with where we feel like God is calling us as a family and in ministry, and it's time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a long process because I don't like to quit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but, and I certainly, you know, felt the pressure to provide for the family. And,
sure. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was ready to just go, I don't care anymore. I'll go flip burgers. I'll go pour shots at mm-hmm. Starbucks. Mm-hmm. This is done.
Yeah.
It does seem like, though, sometimes there's, I mean, as we say to lay people, quote unquote, there's good reasons sometimes to leave a church if there's a vision or mission stuff that doesn't line up or whatever it might be. And that goes the same with people on staff of a church. Like, you know, you can say like, this doesn't fit. Like, I can't do this anymore. Like, and so I get it. There's a weirdness there. Like, you're like, oh my gosh, this is my job too. Like this is where my health insurance comes from. And this is where I appreciate, by the way, that you had like this like realization or this, you know, I know this isn't me. This isn't us. And I appreciate that.
And that's really tough, honestly, you know, because it's not only your job, it's your community. Mm-hmm. It's your church.
Yeah.
It's
yeah. Tom, you said
so
that before
much.
Too. Like, yeah, you can't leave you can easily change from Boeing to.
If you're working for some large corporation, that doesn't affect your family necessarily.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Right.
Yeah.
It's not the people.
Your kids
that...
don't change friends when you move from Boeing to.
No.
You know, Microsoft.
Yeah.
Or
right.
Something like that. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. But you know, again, I feel like God just provided for us, you know, and, was just trying to figure out how do I translate all of this, you know, church work and, you know, nonprofit, like my one, sort of legit entry on my resume was, you know, for a startup that was, how do I translate this into something that's actually marketable?
The marketplace,
here?
Yeah.
I've used a computer before.
Totally.
And, grabbed coffee with a friend, that I knew from the church. I knew that he was no longer there and that I thought that we were sort of similarly minded and I was just like, hey, can you help me with this? Can you take a look at this and maybe give me some suggestions? And he was just very gracious and gave me a ton of time. And then at the end of that conversation, I was just like, why don't you just come work for me? And so, and I was like, oh, so let's talk about that. And, it was a good fit. And that was, you know, 5 years ago now. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
And, so again, you know, it's sort of this, I feel like it's this theme of, you know, we're for whatever reason, you know, we're giving to wherever God calls us, and I don't know if we just outstay our welcome or what it is, and we leave sort of feeling sort of beaten up, and then we go somewhere and, you know, liquor wins and, you know,
recover and then make another giant move, it seems.
Yeah, yeah.
So you guys are moving to the moon in a couple of years.
Yeah. Especially, I don't want to go there because then we'd be stuck with, like, who? Elon Musk?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So we left that church, ended up going to this like total polar opposite. You know, we went to this little church, over on Cap Hill over in Seattle, and, you know, it was like 150 people and, you know, the lights are on, the lights are off.
And that's all the production. That's the light board. It's a switch.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I go from, you know, mixing, gosh, 48 channels of stuff to, I volunteered maybe half a dozen times there. At, and we could go from two channels to maybe six or seven.
And that was a real heavy Sunday though.
Yeah, that was intense. Yeah. You know, and it was okay, you know, and, and that was again sort of a reshaping of my self-image and God going, you don't need all of this to define you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe just a question about kind of that experience of transition. Do you feel like God really led you guys and felt like he was speaking to you during that time of transition? And like, what was that like to say, okay, Lord, you gave us either permission or you told us to go, or what kind of experience is that like for kind of uprooting yourself in that way?
It's messy.
Mm. Yeah.
It's crazy messy. Because you go, at least I went through this process of going, okay, God, it felt like you were laying things out to come up here, and we're 3,000 miles,
sure,
and, you know, $2,000 in plane tickets away from family,
yeah.
And so what are we doing out here? And why did we go through that? Because I thought you were, you know, calling us to a place to be influential and to, you know, and yet we weren't. And I think it was because I was looking for this small piece of God, in each of those things. And excuse me. And there was, he wanted to teach more, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah, I think it's a tragedy if we walk away from something and don't try to figure out, well, what was God doing in that place that at the end felt so icky? What were the good things out of that?
Yeah.
And what is God teaching me in this transition? And how can I use these things to follow him, to encourage others? Like, I don't want to waste those things.
Yeah.
It seems like a pretty big, significant change from before, when you're kind of shaking your fist at the sky, kind of why God, through periods of your life, to something different where it's like, now it's like, okay, Lord, what did you bring me through here? What's actually going on? It sounds like there was some growth through there. Like, and not
there
to
was,
say you shouldn't
yeah.
shake your hands in the sky, as we talked about, like, that's okay. That's lament. That's part of our lives as
yeah.
sometimes we should just do that as Christians, be like, Lord, why? Like, lament, like, whatever.
But... And I certainly still do.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that, I would say that doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
At least it didn't for me. But yeah, I'm thankful that I think one of the things is it helped Andrea and I continue to learn how to work together, and how to be partners in this.
Nice.
And part of that a big part of that for us has been me learning to rely on her. Mm. Because I've always been so self-reliant and stubborn. Mm-hmm. And also going, you know, feeling like I had to be the one, you know, leading the charge for our family and you know, clearing the path and all. And I don't think that is always that some, that may be a season, but that's not all, that's not necessarily how we have to operate as men.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you inherited that from someplace? Like that idea that you had to be the one, like, was
I learned it. Yeah. I learned it legit. You know, refer back to that Southern Baptist.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
you know, with sort of clearly defined roles around this is what a man must do in order to be a real man.
Oh,
like that.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, and that, you know, that the man has to be self-sufficient and mm-hmm. has to, you know, muster up whatever he needs.
Show no weakness.
And it's like, no, my wife is an incredible fount of gifts and mm-hmm. we can work together so much better. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said earlier, she is so much more emotionally connected than I am. Mm-hmm. And I learn constantly from that. Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, I think there's a blessing where when I can be just so fogged over by whatever's going on at work or, you know, in that season, whatever's going on at church, and she can help sort of pull me back and you know, there are some of those conversations where I look back and I go, God was speaking through her in, mm-hmm. you know, not in a necessarily a prophetic canonized way, but
thus saith the Lord.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but certainly prophetic. The spirit is working in her and it's beautiful. Yeah. And I'm so thankful for that.
Okay, so maybe I can ask a question. We're probably getting close to needing to wrap it up at some point, but although these are great conversations, but maybe I can. So you went from Bama, Tennessee, to here.
Bama, Tennessee?
Sorry. They're all the same to me, right?
Oh, okay. You know that.
But well, I grew up in Texas. So
yeah,
right.
That's true. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, but you came up to the Northwest, which is completely different culture. You thought you were going to work for a church, and now you're in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Like, what is missional kind of living turn into here for you now? Like, where are you guys at right now? Like, please don't tell me you're going to move to somewhere else or something like that. No, I'm just
not
kidding.
Planning on it. I mean, we talk about it.
as everyone does.
You know, sure. Cost of housing here. What missional living looks like for us, is, you know, taking cookies to our neighbors at Christmas, you know, and, having the families from Lucy's, preschool and Ezra's daycare, over for an Easter egg hunt and, you know, loving people and showing that we're not crazy, but we are Christians and, that we're not even as necessarily as conservative as you think we are, but, we're also not crazy liberal, but we're, you know, we have beliefs and we hold to them and we live our lives trying to love people around us. And when crises come up, it's painful, but we have something to do with our pain
that's cool,
that we can process our pain with God and it's meaningful. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that there are reasons why we have absolutes and boundaries in our lives and that we're not simply going with whatever the popular discussion is, but we want to engage in that discussion. Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you're a normal human being living in a place with perspectives on things that come from something bigger than yourself, you know? So it's like you're able to have that and not just be an alien or something like that, or be so disengaged from the culture, or be so angry at the culture. I know how a lot of times we as Christians kind of get frustrated and kind of want to give up with this wicked place that we live in or whatever it is.
Right.
And whereas I heard you and your wife talking about, you wanted to live kind of missionally. And so how do you do that? Well, you live like a Christian in the context of your community.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, well, if you get frustrated, you sort of have to dive in more, which it's not necessarily intuitive, but it getting frustrated and throwing up your hands doesn't solve anything. Mm. It just means that you're angry over on the sidelines while everyone else is having a conversation.
And one of the things that I think that helps keep you from being frustrated or angry is relationships. Like when you're bringing cookies over or you're having people over to your house, they're not enemies.
Exactly.
They're your neighbors. Cool. And they are people in need of Jesus. They are the people of your mission field. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas if you pull back and you throw your hands up, they become depersonalized ideologies.
Other.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, but instead, that's Sam's mom or that's Lily's, grandmother or
that's
whatever.
Cool.
You know, these are people. And they're people that we're in life with regularly.
That's
most of these people we're seeing every week.
Yep. Super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Harry, man, there's a lot that, thanks for sharing everything. I mean, that's a whole lot. I hear, being also from the South, I hear a lot of my story and yours, so that's a different podcast, and then the whole art thing, man, I could talk for hours with you about that, but
we need to line up some some pub nights or something.
We'll do it. Yeah. Some pipe and beer nights. Man, you've talked a lot about what the Lord has done, in taking you various places, to Nashville, to India, back to Nashville, and then back out here on the mission field in a different way. And that has looked different than you thought. What has God been teaching you in recent history? Let's say in the past couple months, what have you been learning? What have you been experiencing?
That's a good question.
Now we're getting personal.
A big thing is that I continue to need community more desperately than I ever thought. Because there's this temptation, particularly when you're in the mission field and it bleeds over, into life in the States, that you have to be community for everyone else.
Yeah.
I'm constantly being reminded that I need community. I need community desperately. That's a hard thing right now because it feels like we don't have a lot of margin for that. That's something that, Andrea and I talk about a lot. Especially with the two small kids, it's just like, we don't have a lot of time and we don't have a lot of just energy, physical energy to go out and do something with someone else or to have people over. You know, it's like, okay, we've got this much space. We're talking regularly about how we can carve that kind of space out. And it's hard. As many opportunities as there are at Imprint and in the community at large, it's still really challenging to find space to find a couple of families and that you want to just do life with.
Yeah, to be your people.
But it's necessary. It's so necessary. Especially since we don't have family up here.
In a big way.
Yeah. Um, And I think I'm continuing to learn to. I want to achieve things. I want to do things. I'm not that ambitious in terms of I don't want to be the CEO of a company someday or anything. But I want to feel like I'm getting things done.
Yeah.
And I need to continue to learn to be okay with things being half done. Mm-hmm. Not because of laziness, but because there's time to do some more later.
Mm. And, yeah.
And so I'm trying to find that sort of rhythm, you know, and sort of the, I think some of that is sort of the, you know, our previous sort of liturgical setting, sort of calling to me a bit, you know, I'm hungry these days for that rhythm and peace. And, so I'm trying to figure out how that integrates when, you know, our 2-year-old crawls into our bed at 3 in the morning.
Right. Yeah.
And you drag yourself out of bed at 5. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah. After getting kicked for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
This sounds personal.
I'm not speaking from experience.
And it's like right in the middle of your back.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. And she's dead asleep the whole time. And somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know how. But anyway.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. This morning, Ezra was using my head as like a bongo or something at like 1 in the morning.
Awesome.
Dead asleep. Just thump, 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 thump. Yeah.
Have him, you know, bring him in. We could probably use him on Sunday morning.
He'd be all over it. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Either that or totally shy and clamping on my leg.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, man, Harry, thanks for being here. Thanks for, sharing.
Thank you.
Thanks for the group therapy.
You got it, man. Yeah. I think, you know, we're all in process. All of us are, but man, there's something, you know, what we've been promised, what we've been saying here at Revelation, there's power in recounting what God has done.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is going to touch someone's ears and hopefully, encourage them, hopefully, push them forward and that kind of thing.
Right.
If you guys have any questions for us, any comments you want us to pass on to Harry, anything like that, send us an email, podcast@imprintchurch.org. But other than that, we will see you next week. Say bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org. Baptist.